Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by visiting IMSAradio.com or search for IMSA Radio wherever they get their podcasts.
Here are the gaps in the DPI class. 10.2 seconds separate Kevin Magnussen in the Cadillac Racing 02 from Philippe Albuquerque in the number 10 Konica Minolta Acura. Then it's a further 7 seconds back to Pipo Durrani, who drives the 31 Whelan Engineering Racing Cadillac in third. Loic Duval 6 seconds back, car 5 for JDC Miller Motorsports. It's a Mustang sampling caddy. And in fifth place is Ollie Jarvis, car 60 for Myashak Racing with Kurt Agajanian, a further 6 seconds back. They're all on the lead lap, and when you combine those splits, just 30 seconds between K-Mag and Ollie Jarvis. They've got 5 laps on the LMP2 field, which is led by Patricio O'Ward for Dragon Speed, car 81, from Guido van der Garde for Racing Team Nederland, Bruce Jones.
And Guido van der Garde, who is the faster of the pair. It's 3.5 seconds between them, but certainly the Flying Dutchman, who, I tell you what, it doesn't matter what he races, look at him on the first lap of a race. He loves to overtake. So he's certainly got his tail up for Racing Team Nederland. And in fact, it was Guido who was being asked earlier about the form and the rise of Dutch drivers. I mean, last year was phenomenal for drivers from the Netherlands, obviously with Max Verstappen taking the world championship, but Rinus VK doing a brilliant job stateside, and so many others, and looking down the order, just in all sorts of classes. And I tell you what, if anybody has never been to Zandvoort, fancy a trip over to Europe, come over. It's right on the seaside, a bit like Daytona, in fact, even closer. You can feel the sand blowing off the dunes on the North Sea coast onto the edge of the circuit, which is actually built into the sand dunes. It's party town as well, a great place to go racing, and it's fantastic that circuit has been plucked back up, brought to Formula One level again, and it is just one of those circuits in itself, not the most brilliant circuit in the world, but for the atmosphere and the entertainment, you've got to put it on that list. Come and do a European tour. I think the yin and yang, you've got that, and then just go not a million miles away to up into the Ardennes, Forest and Spa-Francorchamps. I think that's a pretty good pairing.
You can get in touch, remember, at IMSA Radio on Twitter, and at Wicker Bill has done exactly that. Tweeting a picture of the state of Indianapolis right now. It says Indianapolis Motor Speedway says hi. Stop complaining about the weather, is the suggestion to you and I, Bruce. Be thankful you're running at a different oval, because it is probably 3 or 4 inches of snow at Indy right now.
Well, it's probably because I'm involved, because the one and only time I went to Laguna Seca, there was snow on the mountains in the background, and the regular circuit commentator there has said, I've never seen that before. I thought, oh well, but I'm enjoying my visit all the same, thank you very much.
Yeah, there's something to be said maybe about English people bringing the weather with them, but it is even colder in the States and in Florida, in the Sunshine State, than in England currently, with this temperature not set to improve for a good few hours yet.
But the sun is shining on Ali Racing, because the 48 car is on the move. This is the car that's had a hideous amount of time lost in the pits, but Jimmy Johnson still in the race. This is the one that we thought was the first of the fallers, effectively taken out. There was a clash going on the exit of turn two, and Jimmy was clashed with the GT class car. They went over the grass across the infield, but then it was that slow lap limping in that right rear corner. Johnny was at an angle of about 10 degrees away from true. The tyre started peeling back, and the crew has done a solid job, but 10 hours to go, it's still going. But just let's go back a short while to the half distance point in this 24-hour race. The top 7 cars, all 7 cars in the top class in DPI, were on the same lap. It was phenomenal. And then in the next hour, 2 cars cracked. One was the 48 car that's now back with Jimmy Johnson at the wheel, and the other was the 01 car, and that's down in its team garage in 40th position. They're trying to effect a change, but if you just had a little nap, I'll tell you what the problem was. Wiring problem. At first they thought the car wasn't getting power, wasn't getting electrical charge. They changed the alternator, but the wiring loom, which is, as anyone knows with any form of a car with lots of electronics on it, it's hideous trying to identify what is wrong. It's not a quick fix, but fingers crossed for the crew from 01 Cadillac Racing.
45 minutes pretty much for the 48 car during its very long pit stop, and that was from 2:25 to 3:25 rather, through till just beyond 3:10. So 2:25, just beyond 3:10 to be exact. And the car has done one more stint since then, 20 odd laps for Jimmy Johnson, and he stays on board to return to the racetrack. To say many laps down, 409 completed for car 48, 20th position. The race leaders in DPI are now onto lap 434.
But it's one of those moments when that first stint after a long stop, is there going to be another problem that hasn't been identified? But clearly it's run cleanly. So for the 48 crew, all they can do is keep going. That's the crew for Ali Cadillac Racing. It's Mike Rockefeller, Jimmy Johnson, who's at the wheel, Kamui Kobayashi, who was the absolute star in the opening laps of the race,
yeah,
and Jose Maria Lopez. And, of course, for Jose Maria, it's his first experience here, but all those years in the World Endurance Championship with Toyota, you know, this is obviously one he's been dying to take part in for years, and now he's got his chance. But unfortunately for him, the gun has been a little bit spiked, the 48 crew.
Nearly 14 seconds now for Kevin Magnussen leading the race. Lap time round here is a minute and 35, or actually for the second and third place cars, slightly longer than that, into the low 138s as they catch GT traffic in the most awkward of areas. But it is still 30 seconds separating the top five cars, so that's a third of a lap. Quite phenomenal statistic when you consider we've been racing for over 14 hours now, as one of the G-Drive LMP2 cars had to slice its way through a couple of GT cars, Speedway Turn 1, to the left of one, to the right of another, survives it.
Well, what you always look for, particularly on the bank part of the circuit here, is for the prototypes or the faster cars to take the upper line, and unfortunately trying to go the lower line inside one of the GT cars then led to him trying through the first bank turn to go high to get round the second, and there wasn't a big gap between them, but sharp intake of breath. I don't know if that was Tiemann van der Helm, it was certainly one of the G-Drive Racing Orica's. Was it 69? Was it 68? But certainly whoever was at the wheel was right on their toes. But Tiemann van der Helm, fourth in class, if it was him, in the number 69 Orica, running not quite fully on the pace. He had a little try at Formula 3 last year, but this is still new territory. He did one Michelin Le Mans Cup race, I seem to recall, last year. But this is a whole new experience. I mean, racing, anybody who comes to Daytona for the first time, be hard enough if it was in a class of car they were well accustomed to. So Tiemann learning as he goes, he's in fourth place, so that's a good place to be in class.
Down the inside of a GT Daytona Lamborghini goes the recovering United Autosports LMP2 car, and a moment or two ago the 16 Wright Motorsports Porsche had quite a moment as it was being pursued by Mercedes, possibly the WeatherTech car. So that they were nose to tail into the Western Horseshoe, and the Wright Motorsports car did indeed lose a place. It was the 57 Michael Grenier Windward Mercedes, in fact, so not the WeatherTech machine, but GT Daytona standard class rather than pro, and 57 is through and into the lead, Bruce.
Into the lead of the class. So clearly the mechanic with the air hose did a fab job. We saw the replay of that a short while ago, and again it's the sort of ingenuity of pit stops. Little things can just sort problems, or in some cases just prevent them from becoming problems. There's a little bit of something on telemetry tells you the temperature's too high at Daytona. The temperatures are staying rock low at about freezing degrees, but obviously under the engine cover, under the hood, under the bonnet, call it what you will, the temperatures do rise. But for Windward Racing, yeah, what's the advantage in class over Jan Halen? 2.9 seconds, and that was the change of position. 57 Windward Racing Mercedes ahead of number 16 Wright Motorsport Porsche. Third in the GTD class, Spencer Pompelli, but he's a little bit further back, the 44 Magnus Racing Aston Martin. Again, we've got this fabulous mixture of manufacturers.
And that is set to continue all the way to the finish, you would think. The beauty of GT racing, and particularly in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship, GT Daytona, whether it be pro or whether it be the standard class that we've had for years and years and years, the balance of performance is, even for round one, pretty much bang on to have so many different manufacturers all with a shout of taking the win, and even more to get a podium out of this. The five car squirrels past Jan Halen, is now down to second place. The five car being driven by Loic Duval for Mustang Sampling in their JDC Miller Motorsports prepared car. And Duval, 7 seconds adrift from Pippo Durrani. Jarvis last time around wasn't quicker, but I think for the main part Jarvis is catching the Frenchman, but it's taking a fairly long time to get within touch. And the fifth place DPI car possibly wanting a caution just to close up those gaps, because it's now over 30 seconds away from the race leader Kevin Magnussen. The 10 car of Philippe Albuquerque just has to wait to allow a Porsche to go through the Le Mans chicane before picking it off on the exit.
Yeah, patience very much a virtue, but the person who doesn't have patience is the driver leading the race, and that's Kevin Magnussen. 17 and a bit seconds clear last time around. Wait for Philippe Albuquerque in second place in the number 10 Konica Minolta Acura to go through to see if that advantage has stretched further. I sense it will, because yes, it's gone to 19.4 seconds. The traffic stacked up in front of the Portuguese driver, but Kevin Magnussen rocking the track at the moment. 437 laps on the board, as has Philippe Albuquerque, as has Durrani. Now in fourth and fifth places, Loic Duval and Oliver Jarvis. Jarvis, yeah, he did it. You're right, Johnny. He gained a quarter of a second on Loic Duval, but as we've seen, every lap traffic can be an issue. Now, if you're fans of the Dragon Speed USA crew, it's still their advantage in the P2 class. Patrizio Ward, 15 and a bit seconds to the good over Rui Pinto de Andrade, who's in the number 8 entry in the P2 class, which is Tower Motorsport, that's been really at the sharp end of the field as well. But for Dragon Speed and Tower Motorsport, things are looking very handy for them. But Guido van der Garde, you know what? I said he was gaining, but he's just gone into the pits. But he had been in second place in class. That's why Ward's advantage is so much. But Racing Team Nederland, they'll be back out with their Jumbo-sponsored car, yellow and black, and very well-known on the European side of the Atlantic, but big fans of racing stateside, and I believe that's something they're going to be doing a lot more of, and in fact looking to do more and more IMSA races, if I understand. And Dragon Speed now look to be peeling off to come into pit lane.
Yeah, here comes O'Ward right on cue. That was a 19 lap stint, probably 20 when it ticks over the start finish line. Did 21 on the stint previously, but that did involve two laps of yellow flag, so looking like a 19 and sometimes 20 lap stint that is possible in the LMP2 field. It will be a driver change as well, so Pato O'Ward to step out. And it remains, all the wheels are spinning with that car up on the jacks quite a lot. As the advice then is, I'm not sure whether that was a sticking open throttle maybe, because I didn't think it was a driver still on, well, still in a position to be pressing the accelerator.
I didn't either. It's not the case of don't lean on that when you're climbing out of the car, but I thought he was fully out of the car, but anyway, there is a driver fully in now and being strapped in by the driver who's just got out, so looks under control. But I think well spotted. Certain championships, that's not a good thing to be having.
Yeah,
we wait and see for Dragon Speed.
Well, thankfully the member of personnel that was on wheel gun duty was able to jump clear in time, because it's very easy to get a broken wrist all of a sudden the wheel starts spinning out of your hands. And yeah, you either get a rapidly rotating wheel gun that's already been attached, or you can jump clear and avoid disaster. Thankfully it was the latter there, but the car is back on the move once more. And otherwise it was a relatively seamless stop. They did lose time with trying to shut that throttle off, though. The 81 car slithering its way down that narrow strip of tarmac to get back into the race. GT cars thundering through the other side of that relatively low concrete wall. And the 48 car as well up the inside, which is a recovering Jimmy Johnson. So we should be able to get a word with Patricio O'Ward very shortly. 81 car taken over, not by O'Ward, because Joe's just told me he is a couple of feet away from him. It's Colton Herter, who now flashes up on my timing screen as the replacement driver. That's a very uncomplimentary way of phrasing it, but you know what I mean. He's by no means a replacement. He will go just as quick as Pato O'Ward, be assured of that.
Now it's suddenly pit stop time, number 10. One of the DP class cars is in. Philippe Albuquerque, that's number 10, which is a Konica Minolta Acura. And number 5, Loic Duval. Gosh, those stints have really flown past. He's the JDC Miller Motorsports Cadillac in from second. So, well, into the pits. Kevin Magnussen still leads by over half a minute now from Ollie Jarvis. So the number 60 Mireshank Racing Acura moves up into that second place. But it is pit stop time. Expect Pipo Durán to come back round through into third place into the 31 Whelan Engineering Cadillac. But it's all about Kevin Magnussen at the moment in the 0-2 Cadillac Racing entry. It's been peerless, but he's put it at the front. That is the point with Kevin.
Now, it'll be fascinating to me to see how long Ollie Jarvis can go into this stint, because he did the longest of the chunk previously, 23 laps, but that was helped along by some caution. And now, as mentioned, let's get to Joe, see if he can catch up with the Dragon Speed crew.
So, Paddle, it's your first experience of driving in the middle of the night, racing in the middle of the night. What's your thoughts?
Oh, it's good, man. You know, I've done my fair share of mistakes, to be fairly honest with you. It's just, you know, many different rules that I've been kind of caught off guard in a way. But, you know, I gave the car to Colton in first. Not sure if we had a pit lane infraction this, you know, when we came in. But, yeah, it's just, you know, there's a lot going on, and there's still a long way to this race.
Yeah, you claimed a little pit stop infraction there, but in fairness to you, you experience all of this. You're not normally getting out of the car in an IndyCar pit stop, so in fairness to you, it's a learning experience.
Yeah, we've been having an issue with getting the car into neutral, coming into the box, and, you know, first they tell me, leave the engine running, so I leave it running, but then they say, you should have killed the engine, so there's just a lot of miscommunication there. It's either we kill the engine or you want me to leave it running. It's one or the other. So I've learned my lesson now. I have to kill the engine because the transmission won't go into neutral when I come into the box. So, yeah, I mean, we'll get it sorted for the next time.
Pato, if you could give our listeners an idea of the differences with this LMP2 car and your everyday office of an Indy car.
Yeah, I mean, it's an endurance race, right? There's driver changes, there's seat changes. This car is set up for the preference of all four of us. And, yeah, I mean, it's definitely way different to what IndyCar is like. It's endurance racing, right? So you can take it a bit more chill in certain areas. But it's certainly, you know, we're certainly up against the best, so...
So that's interesting what you say. Four drivers equally as good as each other. And is there an element of compromise from each and every one of you so that you get like a medium?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, we've just given the engineer a little bit of our feedback of what's going on. But in general, we've all been fairly happy with it. We all kind of got to a point where it's like, you know what, this is drivable, this is manageable for everybody. And that's what we ended up with.
You're going to try and get some sleep now?
Yeah, I need some.
Yeah, thanks, Pato.
Well, Pato has been at Daytona previously, remember, although rarely in the top class, but has been a class winner in PC division in 2017. They won the championship, actually, in 17 as well, but started the year as they meant to go on to for Performance Tech Motorsports with a class victory.
But he's a driver who's been gathering experience. He's had his run in Formula 1 at the end of last year, getting experience there. And I know you're the same, Johnny. It's all about drivers getting as much experience in their career from all angles. And yep. I honestly think, yes, we heard Pato there explaining that he's got to get his head round the rules. Okay, rules can be different, but the driving experience, I really think the more you drive brings more from all angles and makes a better end product. And it's not like Pato's got loads of years on the clock. He was born in 1999. I still struggle with drivers who were born in the 21st century. I need to move with the times, because certainly some have been born quite deep in the 21st century, but still an old head on young shoulders, but gaining experience, and has really done a fantastic job on the North American scene, well, in fact the global scene. And here at now, he's having a really good run there for Dragon Speed. But yeah, it's the rules that often trick drivers. And you know, how many times in the commentary box over the years, Johnny, have we put our head in our hands when someone's done a really good job and they get done for speeding in the pit lane? You know, they've had a monstrous stint. They've shaved tenths of a second off every lap. They've caught the car ahead. They've overtaken it. And then they've just thrown 30 seconds out the window. How long it takes to come in, stop and go penalty and back out. And it just makes you almost weep. And we're the commentators, not the team managers. How they feel, I don't know. But it's about nailing those rules. So communication, like with anything, is absolutely key in motorsport.
4 o'clock in the morning at the Daytona 24 Hours. It's the 2022 edition, the 60th running of the Rolex 24. And Kevin Magnussen on lap 442 leads the way. Simon Pagenaud's about to cross the line. I'll give you a true gap of those two cars from the Cadillac Racing 02 and the Mayashak Racing with Kerb Agajanian in a moment. But again, because of pit stops, those gaps can't be relied upon hugely. We're expecting stint lengths as similar as we had in the previous segment, which was all green. Has Ollie Jarvis's car come in? Yes, he has, because he got out of that car as well and handed over. So the third place car now in the hands of Simon Pagenaud, who drops to sixth place. But Jarvis's stint was another 22 laps where he managed an average of 136.4. That wasn't quite the best. Kevin Magnussen, in his average lap pace, was a 135.7, the only driver of the five that were out at the time to break that 136 margin.
Right, I've got a task for Joe Bradley. Joe, you need to work your way down to TR3 Racing Pit, because not so long ago we were talking about Andrea Cordarelli being in the hunt in the GTD Pro class. He got up to third place in that class, but it's been a long time in the pits. The number 63, the pale green Lamborghini, definitely one of the front runners. We were just enjoying the fact we had five different manufacturers in the top five positions in GTD Pro. But for the 63 crew from TR3 Racing, it is a little bit of a problem. Joe, do you have any news on the 63 Lamborghini?
No pit garages here, Bruce. You're thinking of Le Mans.
Sorry, I was...
It's been in the pits for a while, it's not on the apron, mate. It's back in the paddock. So I'll catch a bus.
Join the queue. There's plenty of shuttle buses around here, even at 4 o'clock in the morning, Joe.
Yeah, there is. I'll head down to their pit box and see if there are any... personnel there. Usually when they have a bit of an issue like that, then you find an empty pit box, a bit like the Mary Celeste. Right, I'll check it out, Bruce.
Thanks, Joe. Yeah, just a slip of the tongue there. I know full well that you have the pit lane where you just got the pit apron and the crews jump over the walls from under their awnings to service the cars, and the pit garages in the paddock behind. And obviously a lap of the circuit is 3.5 miles or so, but I think Joe covers that every sort of a couple of minutes in the pit lane, particularly when we very helpfully say, do you mind nipping off to the paddock to find out what's going on in the pit garages? But just to point it out, the TR3 Racing Lamborghini has clearly got a problem. It was right on the pace, right in the hunt, but in GTD Pro, it is Jules Gounon, as I suspected, has gone back into the lead in the class. The WeatherTech Racing 97 Mercedes, number 14, is in second place. It's the Lexus from Vassar Solomon, and that is Ben Barnicote at the wheel. The Mathieu Jaminet, just half a second down on him in the number 9 Porsche that's been in the hunt all along, the Pfaff Motorsport Porsche, the one with the red and black plaid front end of the car and the silver haunches.
Yeah, very recognisable, even in the night time, actually, under the floodlights of the Tri-Oval. And it heads out of Turn 4, Speedway Turn 4, and through that segment then to whip across the line and put another lap in the books. That's 418 for Barnicote and Jaminet. Dennis Olsen's a further 7 seconds adrift. And then Davide Rigon in the 62 Ferrari that he's sharing with James Collado at Risi Competizione, Alessandro Pierguidi and Daniel Serra in that lineup as well, mightily strong, basically combining the two duos from the FIA World Endurance Championship in one car. As the Pfaff car got through there, so Jaminet on the exit of the International Horseshoe jumps ahead of Ben Barnicote to snatch second position. May only be a brief spell in front of the Lexus. No, it's going to stay there though through the second of the horseshoes and now up onto the high banks. So Ben Barnicote still within touch of Mathieu Jaminet, but that Porsche looks very strong indeed off the slower speed stuff of the infield and back onto the speedway.
Now, I like to try and be a nice guy in life, but we won't wait until Joe's gone to TR3 Racing. Let him go back to the pit lane and then say, oh, by the way, could you check on 59 Crucial Motorsports McLaren? That's been in the garage area for a very long time. So, Joe, if you could actually just clarify when you get there if that one is one that's been parked. The Crucial Motorsport, the orangey-yellow McLaren that went very well early on but hasn't been going since.
Yeah, so the actually Joe can get us an update on that straight away. This is a good response time, Joe.
You remember when I first came into my stint, that was the McLaren that was having gearbox issues, and the team boss was telling us that the decision was about to be made as to whether they could rectify that problem. Call me a detective, that might be the case, guys. They might not have been able to get that fixed, and the Crucial Motorsport McLaren, may be a retirement. But I'll confirm that so that you can slash across the marker of doom across that number.
Yeah, a process we never enjoy doing, but it has to be done. And there are going to be cars as we work our way through the 2022 edition of the Rolex 24 that unfortunately drift away and will not make the finish. As few as possible, ideally, with the 60-odd starters that we had.
I always feel that motor racing, from whatever angle you approach it, is about evolution. And I've decided I'm going to have a new scheme. I'm going to bring two colours of marker pens.
Ooh.
Think it's out, and then definitely out. So it'll be it'll be a sort of fading from green to red or whatever. I know they shouldn't be seen together, but hey ho.
A marker pencil of doom, and then a marker pen.
No, you've got to be committed.
All right, okay.
Go with the concept, but I do feel for Crucial Motorsports. And it is very easy when you're following the heat of the battle. Someone disappears, they fall off your timing screen that's got 40 runners. Of course, we had 61 cars, and you sort of forget about them. We're not mean as people individually, but it is quite tricky to keep on top. That's why we make Joe cover huge, huge distances. Luckily, he's like a gazelle.
Even at 7 minutes past four in the morning, there was a car stricken on the inside there of the turn four. So between turn three and turn four, a car either stopped or going very, very slowly. And everybody else was able to sweep by because it was off the racing line. I just wonder whether I could see some yellow lights coming out of turn four, but we're staying green. Race control going to give that car ample time to maybe inch its way back to the pit lane.
Yeah, wait for a replay. It's that moment where you just, your brain goes, did I or did I not see something that's untoward, out of shape, lights where they shouldn't be? We'll wait to pick it up. What we can tell you is Pipo Durrani's leading race, 31 leading the way, which is the Whelan Engineering Cadillac by 0.8 of a second from Will Stevens, who's thrown his hat in the ring, a British racer coming to race in the States this year. He's driving the Konica Minolta Acura, just 0.8 of a second between them. And last time around, the gap reduced. So Stevens is having a go. Can it be yet another win for Wayne Taylor Racing? 9.5 hours to go. Let's not count our chickens, but you've got to be in the mix, haven't you? And that's the real story. And just half a second further back, Loic Duval. So our top three cars covered by 1.3 seconds. This is wonderful stuff, with Loic Duval in third place for JDC Miller Motorsports. And only 10 seconds further back, Simon Pagenaud for the Acura, entered by Meyer Shank Racing. So all to play for. And what's he got on his tail? He's got the 0-2 card, 1.1 seconds down in fifth place. That's Kevin Magnussen, the driver who in the last hour or so has been the greatest attacker. He's getting back up to pace now, just served a pit stop.
Yeah, and I'm looking for other cars up and down the order that had very long lap times last time through. I noticed Kenny Habul in the 75 Mercedes, which is the Sun Energy One car, 3 minutes 19 seconds for its last lap. So what's that indicative of an issue? I'm trying to work out whether Kenny was on an out lap, because remember that the on an out lap, the lap time often includes the pit stop. Oh, it's been 9 for 9 hours. Okay, why is it still shown as running on my timing screen then? That car is a retirement, so that's the reason why that was such a long lap. Apologies, coming on duty at 2 o'clock in the morning has rather gone against me there. Why was there a car that was looking very, very slow on the inside of turns 3 and 4, and which one was it? Still trying to work that out as we get a new fastest lap time in LMP3. Felipe Fraga, new to that class, surely, but lending his Brazilian stock car experience and GTE offerings with Ben Keating in recent years, he's leading the LMP3 class, and that is the new fastest lap of that division.
Yeah, it's it's great when you look at drivers who race very different machinery, not in sequence but in parallel. And that's been the story all along with his sports car career, racing GTs very successfully. He's been racing in the Brazilian stock car scene, which if you haven't found that on the moving screen, do go and find it, because it's fantastic stuff. And you find very many famous Brazilian drivers who, if you weren't paying attention, you thought might have retired from their top line racing careers. They're still competing down there in these space frame cars. So Felipe does that, but you know, he drives cars very, very fast indeed, and you can fully understand why Riley Motorsports wanted him on board, and doing a great job. His advantage over Nick Johnson, it's great to have Nick. Gosh, again, that's a racing career that's gone on forever and ever. He's not racing with Tracy Crone this time, but he's second in P3. And, of course, all those decades of experience that Nick's had here in the States are serving the Swede very well indeed.
Let's get to Joe Bradley in the pits.
Our crew chief at T3 Motorsport, we were just speculating why you guys have lost time in the pits. What's the report?
Yeah, so we were doing good, I mean, for the first half of the race, and we had a few issues, but T3 guys did a great job with getting the car back on track, but unfortunately we ran out of fuel about halfway through that last spin, so they did a great job pushing the car back, getting her back on track, but I guess it's just a makeup game from here on out.
So I suppose the good news is it's not too serious. New tank, full tank of fuel and back out.
Yeah, I mean, the car's still running, and it's our first ever endurance race, so I mean, that's all you can ask for, but we came here to finish the race, and that's still our plan.
And are you enjoying your first endurance race?
I am, but unfortunately I'm freezing and tired, but other than that, this has been an amazing experience.
Yeah, crazy, isn't it? Here we are in the middle of the night, we're freezing cold, but loving it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm from Florida, and I mean, this is not the Florida I know, so this is a little new to me.
Hang in there, mate. It's all about, this is what endurance racing, oops, fell off the ladder, is all about, getting to the end, no matter what.
Thanks very much, Joe. That was T3 Motorsport. And if you go with find a team with a similar name, look for TR3 Racing, because that was the one I was seeking news of, the 63 Lamborghini.
Ah.
So sort of while you're there, but good to hear from, and again, great to have teams like T3 Motorsport stepping up, a German team that wants to come play big time in the States.
I'm still trying to piece together what I had seen or thought I'd seen between turns 3 and 4, and there is an unexplained lap time for Kevin Magnussen. You reckon he was on an out lap, but he wasn't.
He did a 2-minute 23
lap. He did.
Oh, okay.
There was a 2-minute 23 lap in the middle of that, which has ramped up his average lap time for a 9-lap stint to 1:41. When those around him, yeah, and there's drama. I think this is more recent issue for the one for the 0-2, quite possibly, or. Are we going back to now the moment that I thought I'd seen? Yeah, I reckon this was a few laps ago when the car went beneath the double yellow line and rejoined. Thought it was a GT car, I have to admit, but it was Kevin Magnussen, the former race leader, having a hiccup on lap number 446. Since then, it's been fine. A 135.6, a 134.8, a 134.6. There was something wasn't quite right a few laps ago, and I'm pleased now I've got to the bottom of that.
Okay, well, could it have been an overtaking manoeuvre that went wrong, ended up on the grass, and then you got quite a lot of infield there to be going across and rejoin? That could have lost him. What is he down off the lead now? He's 14 seconds down, and his lap time was about 50 seconds. That pretty much corresponds with all the time he's lost. So he's running fourth in class. He's closing in on Loic Duval, who's third in class. You know, I'm never averse to someone having a little problem if they're in the fastest car. They've got to do it all over again and get back to the front. Sorry, yep. Kevin, but it does make a more exciting race.
Well, he's got the car underneath him, just assuming that that problem doesn't creep up again. But the fact that the pace is definitely there and the average lap time is almost sub 140 once again. His best lap time on this particular stint, 10 laps of it, was a 134.6. 134.635, which hasn't been quite as quick as Pipa Durrani, who was electric out of the traps, but average speed looking fine again now. So I think you're probably right that it was either an error or getting caught up with some traffic coming out of the Le Mans chicane, and he needs to put that out of his mind as quickly as possible and try and reel in Loic Duval as quick as he can now.
Sometimes you can have too much information, sometimes not enough, so you have to try and find the happy medium. But what's great is we're trying to see what's happening on the track, and our amazing army of friends and family can keep looking. And Martin Pearson's just tweeted in saying, just had a skim read of updates. We have proof.
So momented, we were talking 5 minutes ago, but there was definitely a car the wrong side of the apron. And it was Kevin Magnussen.
Well, okay, so well spotted. And for the TV crews, you know, it's not an easy job in daytime hours, but to pick up a car with headlights and taillights in the dark, in banking, in a cluster of cars. But just back to Martin Pearson's point, just had a skim read of updates from Daytona 24. Seems to be lots of alternator issues. Do you reckon that's caused by the first race of the season or by cold weather? I reckon by both. But it is a point because these teams, these cars, they're not used to operating in these temperatures. They're not made to operate in these temperatures. And you think in lots of circumstances where you actually, in the cold of night at places like Le Mans, not that it's that cold, you know, they're having to blank off the radiators, they don't want too much cold, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But here, you come here, you expect what you expect. And we just heard from T3 Motorsport, the Floridian team chief. He's not used to these weather conditions, but it is going to be the talking point of this race, apart from the race itself, which has been really tip-top. Top three cars covered by, 6 seconds.
And the preparation was far from ideal coming into race weekend itself, with a lot of the free practice sessions affected by rain and low temperatures. But Phil Hansen, I remember being interviewed, I think by Joe, to say that really these sessions were pointless as far as accumulating data were concerned, because they couldn't use any of it. They knew that the race was going to be dry, but really cold. And it was a question of staying out of trouble as much as possible. Yes, putting some mileage in, as Kevin Magnussen is delayed again into the Le Mans chicane, not through any fault of the GT driver. It was an Aston Martin, I think.
I think it's the Magnus Racing class challenging
car. Yeah, it's
car.
Mercedes, yeah. Or is it? No, it is an Aston.
I think it's the Magnus Racing car. So that's obviously, as we mentioned earlier, Monty Python, the secret driver, the driver who never was doing the night stints out there on the circuit and getting lots of flashing from behind the Rizzi Competizione. Ferrari keen to be at the sharp end of the field again in class. But actually, at this point, GTD Pro is down in fifth place. The class being led by Jules Gounion, the 97 WeatherTech Racing Mercedes. Just seven and a bit. It's a good stint from Gounion. 7 seconds clear of Mathieu Jaminet, the number nine Pfaff Motorsport Porsche. Third place in cars, Ben Barnicot. So that's been a change of positions quite recently. He's in the Vassar Sullivan Lexus. That's car number 14, third in class.
Managed to grab the number now. It's actually the Heart of Racing team, Aston Martin. So car number 27 with Tom Gamble at the wheel. And just looking like it was struggling a little bit for traction coming out of the International Horseshoe, but also needing to make way for the faster prototypes that wanted to get through as well. Tom Gamble in class is quite a way down from the GT Daytona leader, who is still Michael Grenier for the 57 car. We reported on the windward Mercedes taking the lead from the Wright Motorsport Porsche.
He's about 10th in class, I think.
Okay, yeah. Well, he can still do plenty from there. He's got a couple of pro cars actually just ahead of him that aren't ahead of the GT Daytona lead, because Augusto Farfus in the 25 BMW and Nicky Katzberg in the number 3 Chevrolet Corvette are working their way back from difficulties earlier on in the race. There will be a driver change in the Ally 48 DPI as we get this news from... Let's get this news from Joe Bradley.
Yeah, Bruce, what was the mission at TR3? You wanted to... know what the problem was that cost this car some time?
Yeah, basically, because they lost a lot of time. They were third in class and suddenly they weren't. And a long time in the pit garage.
Right, OK. I'm about to ask the chief engineer then. He's actually on the telephone. And not an old-style telephone, an iPhone, I think. But he's on the telephone to somebody. So when I get a chance, when he's finished his call, I'll ask him the question. What was the number of the car? It's a Lamborghini, isn't
63.
It? Yeah, that's the one. I'll just wait for you to call. I'll give you a shout.
It's their green car, not the red car. The red car is in the GTD class. That's the number 19. It's the 63 that was at the sharp end with Andrea Cordarelli in GTD Pro.
And the red background to race numbers, remember, tells you that a car is in the GT Daytona Pro class. green race numbers and indeed green panel on the rear wing end plate, green door mirrors. Whilst I struggle to speak, let's get to a man that's much better at it. Here's Joe Bradley.
Just wanted an idea of what caused the 63 so much time in the pits.
It's the initial incident it had with the Aston Martin and the Mercedes, that it was squeezed against the wall coming out of turn six. Unfortunately, it bent the front tie rod as well and gave up. So we're seeing if we can get it fixed, but it's a few laps down now.
I take it it's a big job. It's going to cost you a few laps, but it's all about getting to the finish.
Yeah, correct. You know, we're already quite a bit laps down, so, you know, racing's racing, and they're trying to do their best, but, you know, the race is almost over for us at this point.
Thank you. Cheers for that. Let him get back to his call. He broke off in his call there to give us that update.
But
it's very Daytona, isn't it? It's a very frantic race. It's a 24-hour sprint, and there's nothing gained on, and lots to be lost in situations like that.
Yeah, there really is, and I think it also comes with experience. For the Romanelli brothers of TR3 Racing, you know, it is still a new experience, and I think what makes it hard is the disappointment, because they weren't just doing averagely well. They were right in the hunt for GTD Pro Class honours there, so it's almost worse when you've got something not in your grasp, but certainly within your capabilities. And with the driver lineup they had in that green Lamborghini, Marco Mappelli, Andrea Cordarelli, Mirko Bortolotti, absolute megastars. Rolf Inaiken has raced with them for years as well, very quick too. That was a car that could, and potentially should, and it would have been one of the major stories if TR3 Racing could have won the top GTD class here on their class debut. But that body language and shoulders down, couldn't you just feel it as Joe was being spoken to? And he didn't even get to mention character building in that one. So
no, it was they'd already covered that ground, I think, by the tone of the interview, realizing that this race is one to be forgotten for TR3, but they will be very grateful for the experience gained, an awful lot of staff, I'm sure, coming across from Grasser to be part of that crew as well, not least the drivers. So they will have some experience in their ranks, but wanting to get a good result for the first time for TR3.
And while in the commentary box, I can see Global Broadcast Centre, you can point out the temperatures are quite comfortable. We know for the track workers, for the pit crews, it's cold out there, but I've just heard it's not freezing. It's -1 now. It's -1 in centigrade, so we're down to 30 degrees Fahrenheit. I'm not making it up. This is unbelievably cold for Florida and for the Daytona 24 Hours. It's another factor, but as we've seen, Johnny, on quite a few occasions, if a driver forgets how cold it is when they get into a warm cockpit, and they think their tyres might have some grip when they leave the pits, they do not. They have to warm them up over several laps, cautiously trying to find that point at which you could possibly start changing direction in the car.
Pippo Durrani leading the motor race to the high side of at least one GT car. There's going to have to be two lapped in this one movement. But Durrani with no need to look in the door mirrors quite yet. A 3.3 second lead over Will Stevens, who was 0.7 of a second slower than the Brazilian that time around. 36.5 was Will Stevens' effort. So no, near enough level pegging, actually. 3.3 seconds becomes 3.2. But Loic Duval applying the pressure now to the rear of Will Stevens' Acura for Konica Minolta and the ARX-05. So that is the next part of this battle that is going to develop, is Brit Will Stevens trying to hold back the very quickly advancing Loic Duval.
Yeah, Loic Duval going out of turn three, very happy to get on the power a bit earlier than Will Stevens. That gave him an advantage. He's now on the right-hand side of the track as they approach turn six. Of course, it's a double left-hander, but he ducks down the inside and seems, as they go onto the banking, to have hasn't got the job done yet. His nose is in front, but the higher line should be the slightly faster line out of the corner. Will Stevens hanging on. He's up near the concrete wall at the top of the track and down near the yellow lines on the inside with the GTD, the Pfaff Motorsport Porsche. They passed either side and no one's lifted off the throttle, but certainly for who's in the Pfaff car. I'll check that in a second. It's Mathieu Jaminet. He must have thought, please, guys, behave. I'm driving as fast as I can. Kept out of their way somehow, but going into and out of the Le Mans chicane, it's still Will Stevens in second place. Just 3 seconds down on race leader Pippo Durrani. but Loic Duval is having fun. But he wants that place, and I think he's going to get it at this rate.
That was very entertaining indeed to see two expert sports car racers with Loic Duval a decision to make. Do I keep the throttle in, or do I just blend out of it so I can get safely round the number 9 Pfaff car? And down into turn one, out in the dusty conditions almost, certainly the marbles there at turn one for Loic Duval. He still found good speed off the corner though in the Cadillac, and it was fascinating to me that to observe the drag race through Speedway's turns one and two. The Acura looked like it had the edge, and now the Cadillac is coming back into its own on the infield, but only the outside line shown for Loic Duval through the kink. So good driving and good positioning of the car from Will Stevens, not allowing the 5 car the crucial inside line through that sequence of tight and twisty corners on the infield. Again, Will Stevens edging the 5 to the outside line. So Loic Duval is going to have to do it the hard way if he's going to get through. Although the outside-inside trick should work this time with the Frenchman, and he's passed.
It just seemed to my eye that, particularly on the infield, that Loic Duval had a bit more grip in the number 5 JDC Miller Motorsports Cadillac. He's made it stick, but again, taking the higher line is slightly faster for Will Stevens, so he's half a car length behind. He's now quarter of a car length. His nose in front, they go past the GTD car, but what comes next? The Le Mans chicane. You've got to go left and right, so Will Stevens has to back out of it. Second place now firmly in the hands of Loic Duval, but again, just at the wrong moment, they find another GTD class car, and that allows a slight lift for Loic Duval. And Will Stevens has got a bit more pace coming out of the chicane and accelerating around the banking. Of course, Johnny, here you accelerate for a very, very long time. They're side by side as they're going to take the left-hand kink onto the start-finish straight.
Straight line speed is all with the Acura here, because at times when it looks dead and buried in third position, it comes back again on the high line to Loic Duval. Now that the Cadillac, though, will lead this time onto the infield, I can see that the Cadillac will start to stretch its legs, because it is really good out of the slower speed horseshoes. The Western Horseshoe, first of all, just has to compromise its exit very slightly because of the WeatherTech Mercedes, or is that the 57 car? I'm struggling to tell the difference between those two in the darkness.
I think it's the WeatherTech car with the two. Yes, it is.
You're right. And that car then sensibly staying to the outside line, being driven by Patrick Assenheimer in the number 15 car. A number of times taking NLS victories in the last few years. Patrick Assenheimer, a real expert around the Nürburgring Nordschleife, but has run here at least once before too on a very different racetrack.
Yeah, just to explain, NLS stands for Nürburgring Langstrecken Series, and just to point out what that might mean, it's long-distance races. They have 8 of them each year, and traditionally they've been 3 hours, occasionally with a 4-hour and a 6-hour, but this year they're going to have double up, and there's going to be 12 hours of racing in one of those. And again, bucket list, people are supposed to have them in life, why not have them? Go and race on the Nürburgring Nordschleife. You don't have to be in the top GT3 level car, you can race pretty much anything. Take a look at the rules, go and look on their website. It's certainly a great deal of fun, but this is fun here too at Daytona. Much, much higher level overall, of course, with the prototypes at the front of the field. But that little battle, it's Will Stevens in second place, got back ahead of Loic Duval by 16,000ths of a second on as they crossed the start-finish line, but they're nearly 5 seconds down on Pippo Durrani. They're matching his pace, but of course they're slightly slowing themselves down as they tussle. But for Will Stevens, he weathered that storm.
That little NLS explainer provided me the opportunity to look at Patrick Assenheimer, who's actually making his Daytona debut. So my mistake, he hasn't been here before. The 32 car is now off the road and into the grass at the Western Horseshoe, but does manage to recover at a much slower speed. So that is the Gilbert Courtauld Motorsports Mercedes, which is being driven by James Davison, was third, now running in fourth position as a result of that mistake. And we'll take a few corners, of course, to clean the tyres on the infield. But 32 back in the race as we head to the pits. And Joe.
Jules Gounon just stepped out of the 97 WeatherTech Mercedes. Jules, you're in contention, but are you happy? You don't look very happy. You don't look very happy. What's going on?
Yeah, we just had a problem at the pit stop. One mechanic forgot to change the wheel, so let's hope we can do a double stint with the tire now. To be honest, the car is feeling good. We are saving fuel because it's our only way to fight against Ferrari. They are really quick, and it's, well, they found it a good setup between the roar and doing 47 and now doing 45-1, so it's good for them, but 9 hours to go. We normally we never give up, so we're gonna try our best with our package and see what we can do with.
Is the tyre a major concern? You know, how worn was it? How much was it giving up on you?
Yeah, it's really really difficult to bring them to temperature, and you need to really be careful on the first out lap, and after even 10 laps they are still not so warm. So it's 4 a.m. also, that's why it's quite difficult. And hopefully by the beginning of the morning when the sun comes, it will become a bit easier for us.
Thank you, Jules. So 10 laps, guys, and the tyres aren't up to pressure.
Yeah.
It's the pressure that counts, you know. The temperature increases the pressure of the tyre, and a race tyre has an optimum pressure to run at. And if you never get there, then the car is not balanced. And that's what Jules was trying to say there. Even after 10 laps, minus one temperatures here. It's a problem, but you know what? It's a problem for everyone.
And it's a cumulative, or rather reverse accumulative, if you like, so that if you start to descend, you know, rather than climb that pressure chart, you're actually just tumbling down it, and you go off the edge of a cliff eventually because it never gets to that point. And really fascinating to know that in some cases, 10, 11 laps into the stint, you're not quite there. Will you ever get there? Because a stint length time of a GT car is 26 laps. So if you're spending over a third of that chasing tyre performance, very, very difficult to do.
You know, I'm really surprised, John, we haven't seen more cars going off. And we just saw James Davison off very briefly in the Gilbert Courthoff Motorsport Mercedes. I'm sure that was absolutely encapsulating that element, just still not quite getting heat in the tyres. But it's always good to hear from Jules Gounion, because he says it like it is. He has a huge amount of emotion. I was around in the days when his father Jean-Marc was racing and got to Formula 1, but in Formula 3000 he was one of my go-to interviews, because he just would get out of the car bubbling with enthusiasm, fantastic English. But you know, that's been passed down to Jules. And you know, he's got quite a record. He's won the Bathurst 12, he's won the Spa 24 Hours, he's won the ADAC GT Championship, but he's always a contender. Here he's still a contender, but imagine being the mechanic who just failed in one little item on their job list, which was to change a tyre. That must, you know, in normal weather conditions, these are freak conditions, it would be bad enough, but in these freak conditions, that must have just made a difficult job all the more unbelievably hard in the darkness. Most of this race, 13 hours of the 12 hours of the 24-hour race in the dark here at Daytona.
21 laps done for Will Stevens, who comes into the pits, Joe Bradley, in the number 10 car. You watch that stop.
Yes, it was a very, very efficient stop, as you would imagine, with the Konica Minolta Acura team. Fuel and tyres. And the great thing is that the IMSA regulations allow the drivers to wheel spin off the apron, which is not only spectacular, but very, very beneficial in these cold temperatures. They get a little bit of heat into the rears by spinning them up, and the drivers have been really, really exaggerating the way they run off, the way they pull away. And next door is the number 14 Vassar Sullivan Lexus. That's just coming to a halt. Listen to this. And now I can't see for tyre smoke. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful.
Right, Joe, thanks very much. You've always got a nose for a story, and also it's a thermometer in many ways, I guess, but all thought it's below freezing at Daytona, but what happens before dawn? You've got under 3 hours until dawn. We often get frost. Might be interesting to find, I'm not joking here, but that's the time the frost will fall.
Yeah.
But, you know, did Michelin think about that when they were assembling their tyres to get them over here? If there's any chance we could get word from a tyre specialist, have they brought any studded tyres? Should it snow? But no, I mean, I'm not being flippant here. The thought of frost on a racing circuit is really quite an issue. And it's bad enough if you get on the grass anyhow, but if it's got a frosted layer on top, well, it's great fun at home in your paddock, but not when you're out here.
Monte Carlo Rally last weekend. Some of the stages high in the mountains were probably 2/10 affected by snow. The rest was completely slick and dry, and a big question mark as to which tyres you used for those stages. If you went with the slicks, you just had to live with the lack of grip and the low temperatures. You can't use wet weather tyres around here because it's completely dry, but the tyre window for temperature and pressures, as we've been saying, you can throw that out of the window, literally. So the difficulty here for the various teams, not only on the outlap, and we're used to that, extended now to as many as 10 laps. There was a change of position there, I noticed, for Pipo Durrani getting up the inside of Alex Lynn, who was rejoining in the 0-2.
Rejoining, having just taken over from Kevin Magnussen. So, but again, you see, that was interesting, because that lap time was 2 minutes 25. Remember, we had that one of 2 minutes 23, so that could have been considered when Kevin Magnussen had his moment where he was off the track. Of course, that equals a pit stop, so it wasn't an unusual thing. So, Joe, just what's happening down in the pits? Just hearing quick buzz from you.
We've got the number 60 Mayor Shankar in again, same as the number 10 Corrigan Minolta car, tyres and fuel only. We're about to drop it off the jacks, and I can see a wheel nut, a big huge wheel nut right in front of the left rear tyre, so I'm going to start her out of here. That's going to get fired off. Gets fired into the pit wall, so we're alright. That was like a bullet coming from beneath that tyre. I saw that happen and I thought, need to get out of the way, Bradley. That car's back in the race.
Good stuff. Glad you're okay as well. Dodging various implements in the pit lane, because it's a working area, remember. Not only for all of our mechanics, but for Joe Bradley and the rest of our pit reporting crew as well. But it's all about knowing where the best place to stand is to get a good view, but also not to interfere with each of these pit stops. Bruce?
I'm just being told, in fact, to answer a question put to us by Dave Alcock, one of our regular tweet correspondents, we had comment from Michelin, who was saying actually they don't think out on the track frost could become a problem, because of course unless you go off the track the racing part is being used the whole time. That should be cleared. It'd be in the pit lane, so let's hope Joe's got the right sort of traction, because we're going to make him work up and down the pit lane to the paddock behind to find any cars that have fallen. That is the likely area, according to Michelin, where any it seems bizarre to be discussing this, there could be frost in the pit lane at Daytona. Another little tweet that I just found quite interesting has just come in from Laurent Mercier, saying this year Jules Gugnot, he's already competed the 12 hours of Abu Dhabi last weekend, recently was the 24 hours of Dubai, this weekend the 24 hours of Daytona, then he's doing the 9 hours of Kyle Army next weekend, I'll be commentating on that, and then the 4 Asian Le Mans races, so 85 hours of racing in the course of 2 months. Thank you, Laurent, merci.
That is quite a statistic, isn't it? And just shows you how much you can go racing out of season these days as well, with so many races to kick off the year. I'm also picturing Joe Bradley the next time we throw to him with a couple of tennis rackets strapped to his feet to deal with this frost, this incoming frost. And we've gone caution, I notice. Caution is out for another time. This will be caution number 13 rather, and we've had 70 laps under yellow flag conditions.
Well,
big incident. Is there a car on fire behind the scoring tower? There's an awful lot of black smoke, a plume of it coming from an unidentified car to this point, and the response crews are very quickly arriving. Ray Wentzel Jr., who is looking after things as he always does so well, rooftop Ray, says yes, a fire has broken out in a car. So we're talking about how cold it is. It is red hot at turn one.
Joe, did I hear your voice from the pit lane looking to cut in there?
No, guys, I can just see the smoke coming across the pit perches as much as you can. And I just saw Rooftop Ray giving us literally the nod with his camera to say, yeah, we've got a car on fire. So safety crew's already on site. Very efficient here at the Daytona Speedway. So I'm pretty sure that's going to be rectified pretty quickly.
Thanks, Joe. We'll try and work out who that is. And something for you to do a little bit later. If you could find out what exactly it was that delayed Kevin Magnussen when he lost the 40-odd seconds in the 0-2 Cadillac racing. Well, Cadillac, obviously. A short while ago in that last stint, Alex Lynn has just taken that over. That's running in fourth. But that's one of these little mysteries we would like to clear up.
Don't think I ever mentioned Rooftop Ray's tweet from earlier on, when he said he's having a great time on the roof, obviously, at Daytona, but admittedly, it is a bit chilly. Many layers of good winter gear. Oh, yeah, and hand and toe warmers are in action. Well, maybe getting a bit of heat from said fire, and we're not focusing on that just yet, just to make sure that everyone is okay down at turn one. And the car awkwardly placed from our vantage point right behind the scoring tower, so very tricky to work out exactly which car is involved. And it might be more than one, not suggesting more than one is on fire, but there could have been a collision into turn one affecting somebody else as well. So caution is out. We're 44 seconds away from another race hour being completed. This will take us to 15 hours done, therefore. Nine still to go. And hearing that it is the number, possibly one of the LMP3 cars, that has become stricken down at turn number one. A few tweets coming in about that. You're tuned to RS2, IMSA Radio, part of the Radio Show Limited network of channels. This is the 2022 edition of the Rolex 24 live from Daytona International Speedway.